All Creatures Great and Small, written by James Herriot and read by Christopher Timothy.
It was hot in the rickety little bus, and I was on the wrong side where the July sun beat on the windows. I shifted uncomfortably inside my best suit and eased a finger inside the constricting white collar. It was a foolish outfit for this weather, but a few miles ahead, my prospective employer was waiting for me, and I had to make a good impression. There was a lot hanging on this interview. Being a newly qualified veterinary surgeon in this year of 1937 was like taking out a ticket for the dole queue. Agriculture was depressed by a decade of government neglect. The draft horse, which had been the mainstay of the profession, was fast disappearing. It was easy to be a prophet of doom when the young men emerging from the colleges after a hard 5-year slog were faced by a world indifferent to their enthusiasm and bursting knowledge. There were usually 2 or 3 situations vacant in the record each week, and an average of 80 applicants for each one. It hadn't seemed true when the letter came from Darraby in the Yorkshire Dales. Mr. Siegfried Farnan, MR, CVS, would like to see me on the Friday afternoon. I was to come to tea, and if we were mutually suited, I could stay on as assistant. I had grabbed at the lifeline unbelievingly. So many friends who had qualified with me were unemployed, or working in shops, or as labourers in the shipyards, that I had given up hope of any other future for myself. The driver crashed his gears again as he went into another steep bend. We had been climbing steadily now for the last 15 miles or so, moving closer to the distant blue swell of the Pennines. I had never been in Yorkshire before, but the name had always raised a picture of a county as stodgy and unromantic as its pudding. I was prepared for solid worth, dullness, and a total lack of charm. But as the bus groaned its way higher, I began to wonder. The formless heights were resolving into high, grassy hills and wide valleys. In the valley bottoms, rivers twisted among the trees, and solid grey stone farmhouses lay among islands of cultivated land, which pushed bright green promontories up the hillsides into the dark tide of heather which lapped from the summits. I had seen the fences and hedges give way to dry stone walls which bordered the roads, enclosed the fields, and climbed endlessly over the surrounding fells. The walls were everywhere, countless miles of them, tracing their patterns high on the green uplands. But as I neared my destination, the horror stories kept forcing their way into my mind. The tales brought back to college by veterans, hardened and embittered by a few months of practice. Assistants were just little bits of dirt, to be starved and worked into the ground by the principals, who were heartless and vicious to a man. Dave Stevens, lighting a cigarette with trembling hand. "Never a night off or a half day. He made me wash the car, dig the garden, mow the lawn, do the family shopping. But when he told me to sweep the chimney, I left." Or Willie Johnston. "First job I had to do was pass the stomach tube on a horse. Got it into the trachea instead of the esophagus. Couple of quick pumps and down went the horse with a hell of a crash. Dead as a hammer. That's when I started these grey hairs." Or that dreadful one they passed around about Fred Pringle. Fred had truckerized a bloated cow, and the farmer had been so impressed by the pent-up gas hissing from the abdomen that Fred had got carried away and applied his cigarette lighter to the cannula. A roaring sheet of flame had swept onto some straw bales and burnt the buyer to the ground. Fred had taken up a colonial appointment immediately afterwards. Leeward Islands, wasn't it? Oh, hell, that one couldn't be true. I cursed my fevered imagination and tried to shut out the crackling of the inferno, the terrified bellowing of the cattle as they were led to safety. No, it couldn't be as bad as that. I rubbed my sweating palms on my knees and tried to concentrate on the man I was going to meet. Siegfried Farnan. Strange name for a vet in the Yorkshire Dales. Probably a German who had done his training in this country and decided to set up in practice. And it wouldn't have been Farnan in the beginning. Probably Farnan. Yes, Siegfried Farnan. He was beginning to take shape. Short, fat, roly-poly type, with merry eyes and a bubbling laugh. But at the same time, I had trouble with the obtruding image of a hulking, cold-eyed, bristle-skulled Teuton, more in keeping with the popular idea of the practice boss. I realised the bus was clattering along a narrow street which opened onto a square where we stopped. Above the window of an unpretentious grocer shop, I read, Darrowby Cooperative Society. We had arrived. I got out and stood beside my battered suitcase looking about me. There was something unusual, and I couldn't put my finger on it at first. Then I realised what it was. The silence. The other passengers had dispersed. The driver had switched off his engine, and there was not a sound or a movement anywhere. The only visible sign of life was a group of old men sitting around the clock tower in the centre of the square, but they might have been carved from stone.